I like to flip to the high-end monsters in the monster manual or the threat compendium.
What game has a threat compendium?
That is the worst name I've ever heard.
They're not all beasts or bestial.
They all have the animal on the inside. Live from the Mundangerous Test Kitchen in New York City, I'm your host Shane.
And I'm your host Ishan.
And welcome to episode 86 of Total Party Thrill, a podcast for game masters and players where we discuss our campaigns in order to inspire yours.
In this episode, we're sharing some of our favorite ways that we've changed the description of something in a game to make it usable in a completely different way. But first, the party plays Knock Knock in the Dynasty Unwarranted campaign, and later, Captain America sells his soul to the devil in the Character Creation Forge.
So before we get to that, just our friendly reminder, we have TPT shirts available on tpublic.com. There is a link in the show notes.
They look so good, but they look better on you.
But we've got a lot of stuff to cover on this one.
Yeah.
Because there's been a lot of D&D news in the past week or so.
Too much?
No such thing.
Okay.
Okay, so first they announced D&D Beyond.
Which is not a Lovecraftian source book. It is, in fact, digital character tools.
Yes. Harkening back to the fourth edition character generator.
Yeah, which while it was sometimes wonky and difficult to use and based on Microsoft Silverlight, which is just garbage, was a really wonderful tool, actually, and a really nice database.
It's definitely like the best official online content that D&D has ever had.
Yeah, that's true. And then even after it got discontinued, there was a community that like put all of the new information into it and made it available. Yeah, it was still a really great resource for like two more years.
Well, now Wizards of the Coast is partnering with Curse Inc., which is the developer behind a couple of websites that I have used for other games. They basically operate a bunch of different websites that build fan communities. Hearthpwn and Foothead, which are both like deck building communities for Hearthstone, the Blizzard CCG, and then for FIFA Ultimate Team, which is a, you know, console game.
It's not Fathead?
Nope.
Okay. I'll trust you.
The point is that if you think about it, a deck builder isn't a far cry from a character sheet.
Very true.
Right? Like, you're still pulling mechanics from different places and putting them in one group and then looking at them and analyzing them. So I think they're probably the right partner for the possibly first time in Wizards of the Coast's history. I'm optimistic.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, it's looking up, fingers crossed. Wizards has a really great track record of screwing things up like this.
Trapdoor Technologies. Dungeonscape, or whatever that was. It was like oh my God, I can't believe that ever got any publicity.
But we're hoping, because we absolutely welcome digital tools.
Oh, yeah, that'd be really nice.
PDFs of books?
Well, I mean, I don't know if that's going to happen.
I don't think it will, but we'd totally buy them.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm still going to plunk down $15 a month for my subscription because I'm a big, dumb idiot.
I have already signed up for the Beyond beta.
So have I, which you can do at dndbeyond.com. And then there was some more news, because WotC is still on their run of Unearthed Arcana.
Oh, yeah.
And I know this was exciting for you, Ishan.
Yes.
And it was
perhaps less exciting for you?
Didn't even move the needle in my week.
Yeah, but you had a busy week. You were listening to a lot of garbage.
I was listening to a lot of garbage. I was also planning all my Guy Fieri jokes for our Flavortown episode that we're doing today.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so glad that teaser has been such a hit with our listeners. Yeah, but the Mystic is the latest Unearthed Arcana class, and this is the Psionicist.
Yeah, yeah, let's just call it that, you know, because they just took all of Psionics and put it in this one class, and there is a lot of 28 pages.
Yeah, which is why I didn't bother reading it. So I'm just going to ask you questions about it based on my own preconceived notions, and you can tell me if I'm right or wrong.
You're always wrong.
Okay. Is it more complicated than Magic?
Yes.
Does it offer more flexibility than Magic?
Yes.
Is it more powerful than Magic?
No.
Is that only because of its limited scope?
There's no wish.
Okay.
End of story.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm guessing this is a point-based system for using basically magical powers, right?
That is exactly right. You have a pool of points. So in the Morning Glory campaign, I allowed the spellcasters to use the spell point system in the DMG, which I should not have for other reasons. But did you find that mathematically more complicated than using spell slots?
No, way easier than using spell slots.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
Because all I had to do was count down. It was just a straight number.
And if you were casting a higher level spell like those, like being like, oh, this isn't 3 points, it's like 9 points or whatever, that was also fine.
Yeah.
Like high level scorching,
yeah, because I just wrote down the cost of for each spell level, and then it was just deduct from my total, just keep a running total. It used a lot of margin space, I will say.
Hmm. So if you can handle that, then I think you can handle the like tracking of points in the sonic system perfectly fine.
If you can count your own hit points, you should be able to count spell points.
They
or
only go
points.
Down. Okay?
Yeah, right.
So I will say there's some confusing terminology for both old and new players. If you're new to psionics, then all of these words are new. Mm-hmm. But if you've played it before, it's not your psionic focus. It's your psychic focus.
Okay.
They're not power points. They're psi points.
Okay.
Yeah. I kept having to go back and be like, wait, hold on. Where's the glossary? Because because old D&D editions are popping into my head and going, oh, that's not a thing.
Great. So, as usual, 5th edition suffers from its own nostalgia.
So, we're going to run through this pretty quickly because, like we said, there's a ton of information. We're not going to dig too deeply into it. But it is a full class, levels 1 through 20. The bulk of the abilities every subclass gets. There actually aren't that many abilities contained within the individual subclasses. So, you get things like Mystic Recovery, which means when you cast, you can heal a bit of HP, which makes every mystic pretty tanky. You get telepathy, which is like the thing that we keep multiclassing warlock for.
Yeah, another way to multiclass into it. Cool.
You deal extra damage on weapon attacks. Again, it sort of like pushes you in this melee direction, but there are certain subclasses that are only going to be casting spells and like don't really mix it up.
Okay, so it's like a paladin then.
It's more like a maybe dragon sorcerer, I guess.
Okay.
But certainly, like, one big drawback to this is that it sort of tries to be everything to everyone, and then sometimes you're going to just end up with all these abilities that you're not going to use.
So you think they should split between, like, a psionic warrior and a psionic mage, basically?
Yeah, like a scion and a psychic warrior, I could see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'd be open to that. I guess I'd have to see how this plays out in practice. You get abilities like Consumptive Power, which I really love the concept behind. You can pay for a discipline, which means you can spend points to activate a psionic power with your hit points instead of your psi points.
I hate this.
Why?
Because there are other archetypes that make more sense to use HP as a resource, but HP is a dumb resource. Like, just because you can count it doesn't mean it should be a spendable resource.
No, I love it. Do you remember when we reviewed the Bloodhunter?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it was like, oh, you know, reduce your HP maximum by one and then get a bunch of extra stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is cool because it isn't just pay HP. It is pay HP and lower your maximum HP until a long rest.
Okay.
Which means that you really need to be in dire straits before you use this. Because even if you get healed, they ain't coming back.
To me, that puts too many moving parts on a sheet. And also, I think HP is just a lousy resource that we shouldn't be spending.
Don't worry. This is psionics. There are so many moving parts.
Yeah, I know. That's, I mean, there's the reason I didn't read the class. It's because I knew what was in it, right?
Wait till you get to the powers.
Just the more complicated way of doing things.
You get Psionic Mastery, which is basically your Blitz ability. You get an extra pool of points.
Oh, second pool of points, you say?
Yep.
Oh, wonderful.
That can only be used for specific disciplines and then can't be crossed over or mixed and matched with your other points.
Great.
Yeah. But you get 9 points that you can sink into a single discipline. Even at 20th level, you can normally only sink 7. So this is your, I would say Glass Cannon. It's your like paladin blow all your spells at once, except that you're really tanky as a caster. You have lots of abilities, and it's actually pretty easy to pick up new abilities that give you resistance to damage and, you know, give you extra HP every round. And then the capstone psionic body is perhaps too good, but only in comparison to the capstones of the sort of other base classes.
Oh, okay. So only in comparison to everything else, is it too good?
Well, I mean, remember, some classes have really good capstones. The druid is a great capstone. Barbarian has a great capstone. Mm-hmm. Some have terrible capstones, like monk and bard.
Fair enough.
But this gives you permanent resistance to bludgeoning, piercing, and slashing damage. You don't age. You're immune to disease, poison, and the poisoned condition. And you have a 50% chance of not dying when you die and reappearing 1d3 days later.
Oh, okay. Wow. That's just better than being a monk, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Wait till we get to the powers.
All right. So what are the archetypes, the subclasses? Just kind of run me through them from a high level.
All right. There are six of them. There's the Order of the Avatar, which is a warlord.
Okay, great.
There's the Order of the Awakened, which doesn't have a theme. You get some lore and object reading abilities.
Perfect. Just what I've always wanted.
Yeah, a bit of damage resistance. I don't understand what it does.
It's the Hufflepuff class. Moving on.
There you go. The Order of the Immortal, which is the tank. More HP, con to AC, intelligence modifier, temporary hit points every round, although that scales poorly. And as long as you have psi points, you're not going to die.
Okay.
Right. As long as you have spells, you don't die.
All right.
Mm-hmm. The Order of the Nomad, which lore and teleportation, and eventually you can teleport at will.
All right, that sounds like a better version of the Planar Ranger.
Yep. The Order of the Soul Knife, for those of you who don't know anything about psionics, this is Psylocke from the X-Men.
What if you don't know anything about the X-Men?
You have magic blades that spring forth from your fists.
Oh, so they're like Calidus assassins from Warhammer 40K.
Yeah, there you go.
Phase knives.
That's actually exactly who stole it from whom. I don't know. You get an ability that lets you commit psi points to increase the, it wouldn't be called enhancement bonus, but basically the bonus to attack and damage of these weapons. You can get up to a +4.
Oh, okay.
I don't understand if it's restricted by your level. That's something that sort of needs to be clarified, because if you can just do that as soon as you have 7 psi points lying around, like, that's, you're level 4 and you have a +4 weapon in each hand.
Yep, that sounds like exactly the way that bounded accuracy was designed.
Yeah, you can regain those psi points by killing things, and sometimes you can just straight up ignore defenses. Their AC is 10.
Oh, okay.
It's pretty cool. It's probably not overpowered. There's the Order of the Wugen, which is the wizard. You can learn wizard spells up to 5th level, and you can kind of gain some damage immunity.
Okay.
Yeah. Neat. It's a thing you can do.
All right. So you're a half wizard, half psychic?
Yeah. Back in the day, you were basically like a sort of elemental spellcaster, sort of evokey, sort of.
Okay.
Right. Now it's just different, but it is another way to gain damage immunity. I think it is poorly written, however. It does say if you have resistance to a type of damage, you can, for a short time, gain immunity to that damage. It doesn't say elemental damage. So, of course, the first thing we're going to do is multi-class barbarian.
Yeah, and then just only worry about psychic.
Bludgeoning, piercing, slashing. Yep.
Cool, 3 levels. Well, there is that disclaimer, not balanced for multi-classing.
That's true. I didn't see anything in here, maybe I missed it, that says that you can't use these when you're raging. They're not spells.
Mm.
A case can be made that you can't concentrate on disciplines when you're raging, because there's some wording to that effect, but I'm pretty sure you can just use these while you're raging.
Perfect. So, disciplines. Anything to note there?
Everything. That's the bulk of the class. It's the spells.
Oh, okay.
And
lovely.
Each one of them is basically 4 spells rolled into one.
Oh.
Because you've got your psychic focus benefit, which is if you know this spell, this is always on. You can have one of those applied at a time.
Okay.
So you can usually know up to 8 spells at 20th level. So you can just swap between them as a bonus action at will. And then each of those disciplines has 2 to 3 different effects that cost a different number of points that you can also choose from at will, as long as you still have points with which to fuel them.
So this is one of those things where I just feel like, why are we crossing streams? right? Like, why have spellcasting and this?
Because D&D was created in the 70s.
Yeah, I know. But but if you're going to cover so many bases in this one class, why not just make that a separate system? Which Dark Sun did, and I love it, and it's fine, right? But if everyone's going to use this system, cool. And if everyone's going to use normal spellcasting, fine. But, like, God, it just sounds exhausting to cross these two.
I agree with, I think, your second point that it's trying to do too much. It is trying to be sort of everything to everyone, and it steps on a whole bunch of toes. I don't know why you'd want to be a monk. If you have the warlord, like the avatar in a party, they just give everyone the ability to dash as a bonus action. Like, just everyone.
Sucks to be the rogue.
Yeah, exactly. And any melee character would do well to multi-class mystic to just get one or two of these crazy ass disciplines,
right,
that make you like super hardy.
Mm-hmm. The price of combat just went up.
That said, it feels for the most part like internally balanced. Does that make sense?
So like the subclasses themselves are balanced against each other?
I think for the most part. There wasn't anything where I was like, well, that one's total garbage.
Oh, okay.
There's certainly ones where I was like, that thematically doesn't really make any sense.
Well, I mean, that's just natural if you don't put a lot of mechanics into the subclasses, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're all going to kind of center more around the core.
But it's a very heavy read. So take a look at it, because like I said, reading one discipline is reading four spells.
I promise I will not do that.
All right. Well, what you will do, I hope, is tell us where we are in the Dynasty Unwarranted campaign.
Well, the crew of the Rogue Trader vessel, the His Enduring Light, have just negotiated their first trade deal with the planetary governor of Novabella.
We did not even hold a bolt pistol to his head when we did that.
No, because you are competent Rogue Traders and good Imperial citizens, and not those jerk-off Inquisitorial acolytes.
I mean, I feel like there is something of them in us.
So what was your deal?
This is an agro world, so it needs to produce a lot of ration bars for the Imperium. However, most of their grain has been spoiled by warp wheat. So if they had maybe some way, combines or threshers, actual machines to help them do the harvesting and the planting, maybe they could increase their production, which means they would have more to sell, which means that as middlemen, we could take a larger cut.
Uh-huh. And who do you know that makes agricultural equipment?
Absolutely nobody.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And who do you know that's looking for surplus ration bars?
Zero people.
Okay. All right. Well, but you are the middleman, so I guess that's your job.
That's right. Currently bereft at both ends.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So we'll set out into the great beyond to find somebody.
Look, they said yes.
That's a start.
Yeah, all over this.
All right. And so you had recently cleaned up the mess of some rogue Inquisition agents.
Mm-hmm. Those jerk-offs.
At the behest of an Inquisitor, Inquisitor Bones. And as a reward, he gave you a tip. There was an Imperial Navy frigate who had issued a distress call recently, and there were no Navy ships nearby. You were probably the closest agents of the Imperium, so there could be a hefty reward in it for you if you responded to their call.
And there are two of us who put some time in the Imperial Navy. So, hey, this should be easy money because there's certainly a reward.
So what did you do?
We looked at our astropath and told him to chart a path through the horrible demons of the warp to get us there faster than the speed of light.
Right, because in Warhammer 40K, there is no faster-than-light travel.
Nope.
There is warp travel.
Yep.
Which is basically traveling through, like, the psychic miasma that's just filled with demons and souls and things that want to eat you.
We'll just take a shortcut through hell.
Yeah, basically. Mm-hmm. And your astropath is a navigator, so that is sort of his job, is to get you safely from point A to point B through the warp.
How do you do with that?
Not good. As usual, mm-hmm. This is going to become a recurring theme for Flair.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was supposed to be a couple days, meaning you would have gotten there quite quickly. Took more than a week.
Yeah. We got there slowly. But we did get there, which is something.
You did. And when you got there, you found an Imperial Navy frigate.
Yeah.
And it's an active distress call.
Yeah. But No one hailed us, and no one responded to our hails. So, of course, we scanned, and we found a concentration of humans both in the armory and the engineerium on opposite sides of the ship.
And being as you had that Imperial Navy background, you kind of searched your memory banks of Imperial procedure and figured that there had to have been some type of event that forced them into lockdown, but that would have been normal procedure.
Mm-hmm. So, of course, if they're not responding, maybe Vox communication is down. So the only thing that we can do is leave the ship and go check it out.
And so what did you do when you got on board?
We decided we would head directly to the armory because, you know, there are weapons there.
Yeah, because you can loot guns.
That's right. We can use them to help liberate this ship.
Right. That's what you meant.
Mm-hmm. So when we got there, the door was locked. And obviously, with two of us in the Imperial Navy, we initiated the rescue code phrase.
Yeah, so you basically like spoke through a cogitator terminal, like a computer terminal, and hailed them inside and said, "The Emperor protects."
And of course, we were waiting for the proper response.
Which was not, "Yes, he does," was it?
No, but that's the response that we got. And so immediately we went, "Okay, not the Navy."
Right. Or at least, if it is the Navy, they're telling you something.
Right. Under duress or something. They're blinking torture.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So you go, all right, we're going to leave.
Oh, yeah. We're not opening this giant door and then like walking into an ambush.
Yeah. But the other half of your party said, okay, but we should try the engineerium, right? What if the good Navy is in there?
And you know what? Eventually, everyone said, yeah, that's a good idea.
Okay.
We'll find out why it wasn't next week.
So this week, our main topic is reflavoring.
You ever find that the class or the role structure of the RPG that you're playing is just too limiting for you to play a particular character concept?
Yeah, man, I'm just trying to express myself.
Please stop.
Okay. I'm frowning. It makes for great radio.
Or maybe you just don't like the in-game connotations of certain powers or abilities. I'm looking at you, Warlock.
Yeah.
Specifically Great Old One Warlock.
I don't want to sell my soul for telepathy.
Why does it need to be ectoplasm?
Yeah.
So, Shane, what are your options?
Find a new game. Mm-hmm. This game isn't going to work for you.
Yeah. Or this group.
Actually, get rid of all of your friends and most of your family.
You should probably actually find a new job.
And also, just, like, be a better person who likes better things.
Yeah, and, like, is okay with the things that they're given and doesn't whine.
Yeah, like a snowflake.
Yeah, yeah. Snowflake, what are you, tweeting in the middle of the night?
Right.
Yeah.
Protesting from your safe space.
Yeah, the White House.
Right.
Okay, what if you don't want to do those things?
You could try changing the way that mechanical abilities of a character are expressed in the game's flavor.
Wait, I can just change that?
I mean, I'm not going to stop you.
What about the people who wrote the game? They're probably going to stop me, right?
Well, you don't tell them.
Oh, yeah, we lie to them by omission.
Right. The thing is, if the fun police knock on your door, technically you have to, you can't lie to them because that would be like lying to a federal agent, which is perjury.
Right.
But you are allowed to not respond to their questions.
Look, you just ask them, are you the fun police? And they have to say yes.
Yeah, otherwise it's entrapment.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, basically what you want to do is take mechanics that simulate what you're looking for and just say there's something else.
Yeah. Now, this requires a bit of suspension of disbelief. But I don't know if you know this, but you're already suspending disbelief.
No, man, there's no fairies in this world. Sorry. Like, elves, dwarves, fine. Fairies, get out. Doesn't make sense, man.
Yeah, super weird. You're playing an RPG, so you're actually not on a spaceship fighting demons.
You're already translating, like, the role of a die, right, into some imaginary action.
Yeah, so, numbers equals story.
Right, so you just kind of translate it a little bit differently.
Yeah, as long as it doesn't affect the underlying numbers, it doesn't need to affect the balance of the game. Just how much fun you're having with the story that people are telling communally. So reflavoring just requires ignoring the parts of the lore or the story elements that the game designers built into it for you. And I think any good game designer will say, no, you should change that at will. That's what it's here for.
Yeah, I mean, a good game designer.
I mean, like, let's say I was playing Reckon is Racing. Not that I ever would.
Okay. Yeah, that was a great game designer, I believe. Great or greatest?
Greaterest?
Yeah. What's better than greatest?
What if I didn't want to play it as a NASCAR game? Could I play it as a spaceship racing game?
No, write your own game.
Fair. I think I will do that. And I'll call it 1 week because I'm going to put in half the effort.
Good choice. Yeah, I mean, you could totally do that.
How about a horse racing game?
Well, they would really only fit if you did it at, like, the Preakness. Like, it wouldn't fit for the Kentucky Derby, but maybe a trashier horse race.
I don't understand...
horse racing?
Yeah, what you're talking
or
about.
Or NASCAR.
Just too Southern.
Okay, yes.
Okay, good. Thank you.
All of our listeners who are also into horse racing know what I'm talking about. The Preakness ran an ad that was, get your Preak on.
Anyway... just decouple the mechanics from your story. Now, this does require learning to parse what is a mechanical effect and what isn't. It's sometimes tougher with older RPGs, but like for the most part, just ask what is meant to be a limiting factor. So, for example, the number of attacks that a character can make in a given amount of time, that's a mechanical effect. But for most games, the part of the body that that character uses to make that attack is... not a mechanical effect. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that because, or that you mentioned older games, because that was one of the things we loved so much about 4th edition D&D, is that it clearly had mechanical text and then flavor text.
Mm-hmm.
And it had keywords and it had all those things that were very clearly written, almost like a game like Magic the Gathering has, right? But then in 5th edition, they started merging all that stuff again. So you get into those situations with like the druid and the monk. Where can an orangutan use karate kicks with the open hand monk? You know, like, is that a similar enough body type in order to qualify for that? And everyone's like, I don't know. Yes? So, but yeah, the main thing here is you figure out what are the mechanics intending to do and just don't change that intent. Just reflavor the description of it.
So, for example, if you played 3.5 D&D... you know that at low levels, two-weapon fighting was freaking impossible, at least to be any good at it, because you needed like 9.5 feats and, you know, 4 magic weapons and like 2 hands, which
mm-hmm.
not everyone has, Shane.
No. Some Thrykreen have 4.
Yep. So it was often easier to just reflavor it, right? You play a normal sword and board fighter, but just pretend like you have 2 weapons. Your second iterative attack is quote-unquote with my offhand weapon. And it even explains why you get that -5 penalty on that second attack, right? Hey, it's with my offhand, you know? And like if you blocked something with your quote-unquote shield, well, you just say you parried it with your offhand weapon. What was the difference? All the dice numbers were exactly the same.
Okay, so let's talk about some... common situations for reflavoring them.
Okay.
So, I'm not a monk guy. I mean, I'll just tell you up front. I'm not a big fan of monk.
Everyone is, actually. You just don't know it yet.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well,
we've got to awaken your key.
Let's say that I'm still not into monk.
Okay. Yeah.
But
stunted. Yep.
I want to be a barehanded fighter.
Uh huh.
How do I do that?
Who doesn't want to, right? Like, okay, even if you don't like the, like, key or magical or psionic flavor of monk, like lots of people want to play like an MMA fighter
or like the Hulk, right? He's not a monk, he just punches stuff really hard.
So you want a character that fights without weapons, and it's often, like so often, poorly modeled by RPGs.
Yeah, because your weapon informs your damage, right?
Right. And it's probably going to be a magic weapon at some point, so like you've lost that slot.
Mm-hmm.
You've only got so many slots to fill your inventory with, right?
Right.
Yeah, you got to totally maximize that. So an easy thing to do in any game that you're playing, doesn't need to be D&D, is just ignore your weapon. There is no spoon. Pick anything that deals bludgeoning damage and just narrate your attacks with your fists, right? It's a Warhammer. Great. In game, My character doesn't have a warhammer. They punch for 1d10 plus strength damage.
Yeah, I like the idea of, like, you've got, like, the warhammer rune on your glove.
Yeah,
and that, like, empowers your fist.
Remember to decouple those mechanics. So the dice only know that, for example, you're rolling two attacks at plus 8 versus AC for 1d8 plus 4 damage each.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if that's a pickaxe or if that's a warhammer or if that's a longsword, rapier.
There you go. Yeah.
All the same.
Or, you know, mini nuclear weapon, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, as long as it deals 1d8 plus 4 damage.
And you got a plus 8 to hit.
Yep. As long as you're still doing that, it doesn't matter how it looks in-game. It could be a punch. Hey, maybe it's a force slam. I'm using the force, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, as long as you don't claim that you can use that force slam at a range greater than your normal reach, there's not a mechanical difference.
Yeah, and we do this all the time, funny enough, with lethal damage, right?
Mm.
Like you know, you're going to kill something, and you say, wait, I don't want to kill it, I just want to knock them out. And so it's like, okay, well, you were going to swing with the blade of your axe, but you turn it and hit it with the flat side, and he falls down.
Mm-hmm.
All right, cool. Like, did it matter? No, we just handled it. And yet we could do that for everything, for the axe itself, you know?
Yeah, and that rule is actually in 5th edition.
Right.
You know, you don't have to declare before your attack, oh, I'm not going to kill them.
Right.
It's when they drop, oh, yeah, I don't kill them.
So this isn't flawless, though, right? And that's sort of the theme of reflavoring, is that there's always something that gets left out, right? So mm-hmm. So what are some of the challenges that come along with reflavoring, say, for melee combat?
Well... Power gamers, butt kickers.
Yeah.
Don't be a douche. Don't try to gain advantages that you wouldn't otherwise have. So, for example, an opponent can't disarm your fist, but they can disarm a weapon. So don't stand there saying, look, I can't be disarmed because I'm fighting with a fist. No, you're fighting mechanically with a warhammer.
Yeah.
Okay? So if you get disarmed, just reflavor it again, right? The force of the blow stuns a muscle in your arm for a few minutes, you know, at least until you can, quote unquote, pick up that weapon.
Yeah, which is totally works in most of the fiction of fist fights because you always hit like punching Colossus, right? And then you have to like shake out your hand,
right?
Because you just punched a steel dude.
Or, yeah, you both punch at the same time, and, like, your fists hit head-to-head for some reason.
That's, like, my favorite of, like, lousy boxing movies. You punched fists.
That's
cool, we both break our hand, then we go home. Like, next.
Except that guy's Wolverine.
Which is great. Yeah, so another thing to think about is that, you know, a fist is technically a free hand.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but mechanically you shouldn't have a free hand because you're using a weapon's stats in your hand. So,
right, weapon in one hand, shield in the other hand, you don't have free hands.
Right.
Remember that when you're trying to pick something up or drag an ally or climb.
Yeah, and if it helps, just turn that weapon into a reflavored item, right? Like I joked, the rune of the Warhammer on your glove, right? But you could do like fist wraps or spiked gauntlets or anything like that. That's going to just give you a little bit of a reminder that, oh, hey, you know, I do have something that's occupying that slot.
Mm-hmm. Right, like maybe it actually keeps the wrap keeps your hand shut in a fist.
Yeah, have you ever worn boxing wraps? Probably not. Have you ever worn boxing gloves? Good luck holding anything with those.
Look, I always know you punch fists.
Okay? Right.
Aim for the fist.
Classic schoolyard strategy, Ethan. That explains why you never got beat up as a kid.
Yeah, that never happened. Ever. So speaking of fist wraps... Remember that you don't want to unnecessarily hamper yourself either. So, for example, if you get a magic weapon, apply the abilities of the weapon, maybe to that reflavored magical fist wrap, or maybe you have a spiked gauntlet. Or maybe even in a game where you're not a magical monk, maybe it's just key power.
Oh, great. You always got to go be a magical boy.
Yeah, that's what I got to do. That's right.
Fine.
We're playing Eclipse Phase. Every game is Eclipse Phase.
Oh. The Eclipse Phase universal field theory is the worst of the RPG community. Or at least of Ishin's.
Every game ever played or that ever could be played is just a simul space in Eclipse Phase. And when you're building your character or leveling up or anything like that, just remember to build it as if it's not reflavored. So, like, for example, the druid that I'm playing in Dark Sun has some wizard abilities, can cast some wizard spells, but I'm reflavoring those as psionic. But in the game and in Dark Sun, psionics don't have components. You know, they don't have verbal or somatic components. You don't need to have a free hand. You can't be silenced. It doesn't affect you. But mechanically, I'm still taking the Warcaster feat because that would give me an unfair advantage if I just said, oh, but my hands are full, but it doesn't really matter because I'm using psionics.
Right.
So, Shane, reflavoring is restricted to players and PCs, right?
No, man. GMs do it, too.
What?
I know.
Can you give me an example? Because I'm having some trouble wrapping my head around this.
Okay. So let's say you've got like a setting-specific game that you really like and you know really well.
Okay.
But you want to adapt it to a new setting.
Wait, huh?
Like, let's say you know Dark Heresy 2nd Edition really, really well, and that you also have an Any Award-losing podcast, and you want to recap a Rogue Trader game.
Oh, I thought that was me for a second until that point.
But you don't know Rogue Trader. You only know Dark Heresy. It's set in the same sort of world. Could you just reflavor it?
And also maybe you're waiting for the Rogue Trader game to be updated to a new edition, but that's not going to happen.
Don't hold your breath.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that Dark Heresy to Rogue Trader is kind of silly, but you know, things like Firefly, right? Like a lot of the sci-fi RPGs are similar. So there's a lot of crossover you can do. So like a space western like Firefly, or like a political military drama like Battlestar Galactica, or even in fantasy, like I think like the Gentleman Bastard series by Scott Lynch, so The Lies of Locke Lamora, those are like basically, you know, crime capers, but they're set in a fantasy setting. So there's low level magic. We already have lots of games that do those things. So, like, how do we use other games that exist and adapt them to these IPs?
Wait, you mean I don't have to wait for the licensed version of the Gentleman Bastards RPG in order to play in that setting?
I mean, you can wait if you'd like to, but I am playing a game of it on Tuesday.
Well, well. What system are you using?
Blades in the Dark.
Oh. How?
So, first of all, you want to find a system that explores similar themes. The mechanics are going to feed into that theme. So, you know, like Edge of the Empire or Age of Rebellion are really good cinematic RPGs that are tied to Star Wars. But there's a lot of themes of Edge of the Empire and Age of Rebellion that you could map to Firefly or Battlestar Galactica.
I've actually never seen an RPG that better maps to Firefly than Edge of the Empire. And that includes multiple Firefly RPGs.
That includes everything by Margaret Weiss.
I played them and I liked them. Sorry, Margaret.
Yeah. And I mean, once you've kind of found similar themes, you just start mapping your proper nouns, right? Like Firefly has Reavers. So find something in Star Wars that closely matches how Reavers act.
Does Edge of the Empire have Rakkul stats? I don't actually know.
Well, I'm sure across some of the games. But, I mean, even if you just have to make up those stats yourself, right?
Rancor.
Yeah, Rancor.
Everything's works. A Rancor.
I agree.
How many Reavers? 9 Rancors.
Yeah. Like, you're almost certainly going to want somebody to be psychic, like River. So that's basically the low-level force powers, right?
Yeah, totally. I've actually looked at this because I am planning on at some point running a Firefly game using Edge of the Empire. Just take out all the things that allow you to move objects with your mind. That doesn't seem to happen in Firefly, but all the other stuff totally does.
Mm-hmm. For like Battlestar Galactica, the iconic thing is the Cylons, right? Which are basically just battle droids. And then, I mean, obviously you have humans are the non-droid Cylons.
Guess what? They all have the deception skill.
Yeah, definitely that.
Done.
Like a few, like lots of dice in that, like dots or whatever they're called. I can't remember. Give them multiple yellows.
The shape change. There you go. It's based on color.
And then for Gentleman Bastards, I mean, it's incredible how Blades of the Dark maps to it with a crew and a theme and all that stuff. You just basically throw out the map of all those nations of Blades in the Dark, light the sky a little bit more and plug in the new locations from Gentleman Bastards.
Yeah, that's the thing. Don't even throw out the map, right? Scribble out the names.
Well, yeah. The maps of Blades in the Dark aren't that precise. So.
It's more like a chart.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, it's like you got a keep and you got slums and you've got a graveyard and you've got the docks. You know, like what fantasy city doesn't, you know? It's not that big of a difference. You want slightly Italian names? Cool. And then the next step is just fill in the gaps, right? Like what's missing that you need to capture that iconic flavor? So I think Firefly maps actually surprisingly well, but like, what about Battlestar Galactica? That doesn't quite map to Age of Rebellion perfectly, right?
Yeah, I think you need to add in a few more of the political intrigue components.
Yeah. Maybe get a little more creative with how you use some of the skills and maybe adapt duty a little bit to play into the politics. And then the Gentleman Bastards, the conceit there is that they're actually priests of a trickster god, right? So you just want to get the deity a little bit more involved in the setting. Blades of the Dark is pretty, you know, religiously agnostic. Actually, really just a flavor thing for the setting that they infiltrate other temples in order to, you know, manipulate the priests of those temples because they're connected in their own ways.
Oh, the Temple Raider of Aladamara. That was one of my favorite prestige classes from 3.5. Well, the name, it probably sucked.
I don't even know what that is.
God of Thieves. Ah, best okay. Way to worship Indiana Jones.
Fair enough.
So what are some of the challenges of remapping an entire setting?
So when you've got core conceits that don't map perfectly, so the Force, for example, could be a challenge, especially like Battlestar Galactica has no psychic powers or no magic. It's just hard sci-fi.
Yeah, so that might just involve completely banning entire sections of a book.
Yeah, which is fine. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, like even like within D&D settings, right? Sometimes you have those kind of things. Like there's no paladins in Dark Sun. They just don't exist. So naturally everyone wants to cram a paladin into the setting.
Which you can do if you reflavor it.
Right. I think another challenge can be if the power levels of the games don't line up to the fiction. So, you know, characters in one setting or another feel more heroic than characters in your new setting or less heroic, right? You don't want a game where you start as a dirt farmer if you're going to be playing Star Wars where it's like, you know, high action adventure.
Yeah, you want to start as a moisture farmer.
Yeah, right.
Obviously.
Preferably with like your end game weapon though.
Just handed to you.
Right.
It's dangerous out there. Take this. It can melt through blast doors.
Exactly.
I do think it's important to note that you really need to examine the fiction or whatever it is you're trying to emulate because it may not be the power level that it seems at first. Firefly seems like they should be low-level characters, but mechanically and given what they're able to accomplish, they're in almost any kind of game they would be modeled in, high-level characters.
Yeah, they're like low social capital, but high power level.
Yeah.
And then I think another challenge can just be that a lot of settings that are beloved by fans are actually a lot thinner in material than you might think. So Star Wars, for example, has, you know, gobs and gobs and gobs of fiction, and its canon has been recanonized now twice. And, you know, comic books, for example, have just years and years of fiction. But, you know, Firefly had 10 episodes or 13 episodes and one movie. That's not a lot to go on, you know? I mean, Battlestar Galactica has been, you know, reshot a couple times, but it's still like, there's 13 planets and they're not even all named or at least, you know, all distinctly identified.
Yeah, it's not 10,000 hours of source material.
Yeah. So you may end up playing in a fiction that is rather different from what you've seen on screen or read in a book.
But it does mean you can now make stuff up.
Exactly.
So another thing that is sort of one of my favorites to reflavor is what we typically call reskinning. So when I'm running a game, I usually find that like I like to flip to the high-end monsters in the monster manual. there's a dearth of high-level humanoids typically, right? Like if you're playing Dungeons and Dragons, look, there's a Tarrasque and there's a freaking Kraken, and sure, there's an Empyrean and there's like 19 dragons.
And then there's an Archmage.
Right. Who's level 12?
Yep, that's it. And we're done here.
But I have an epic level warlord who they're going to fight. What do I do?
You just got to take another monster and replace your warlord.
Yeah, guess what? Everything is dragons.
Yeah. Yeah, you need a sorcerer, dragon. You need a telepath, dragon. You need a great hand-to-hand combatant, dragon.
There you go. The dragon is just a collection of big numbers, so just use those big numbers. Claw, claw, bite, tail swipe, wing attack is the same thing as sword, sword, armor spikes, sweep the leg, concussion grenade.
What, you really mix genres with that concussion grenade.
It doesn't have to be a concussion grenade. All right, they're breathing fire. Great, it's an arm-mounted flamethrower, just like Mega Man.
Or Boba Fett?
Yeah, there you go. Or, you know, they're a spellcaster.
Yeah, it's not Breath of Fire, it's Burning Hands.
Yeah, or, you know, it's in their lair. It's in their, like, secret lair over the volcano, because why wouldn't it be? And they've activated the space laser toward you.
Mm-hmm.
Dragon's thick hide, great. That is good armor or excellent reflexes.
Yeah, it is way easier to take something that is already tuned and balanced for the level of play that you want, mm-hmm. and just reflavor it than it is to try and build something from scratch, especially when we're talking D&D and especially when we're talking about spells.
Oh God, I would never try to build like an actual 20th level spellcaster to throw at a party with like slots and oh God, no. No, I would just take dragon abilities.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
A dragon can also represent entire groups of enemies. Claw, claw, bite, tail swipe, wing attack is swordsman, swordsman, pikeman, spiked chain fighter, two guys with flying kicks.
Works for me. I think there are a couple mechanical challenges to just think about. One is that size can be a factor. Right. Tactically speaking, a lot of the most powerful monsters are also large, so mm-hmm. they're easy to engage. And they might have a reach to like kind of account for that. So just keep that in mind. You might want to play with that a little bit.
Maybe the enemy has like a mech. Maybe they start in a mech. And eventually you beat it up and it falls off. Whatever.
Oh, yeah. That's cool. Or they have, you know, some ability that's giving them, granting them that reach. Like the Force, for mm-hmm. example, yeah. or have a magic weapon that returns. So they like, you know, far strike.
They've got the expanding bow staff from Dragon Ball. There you go. Just give everyone that.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure that works because I know what that is.
Or maybe they have some sort of gravity control or earthbending, whatever. It's much easier if you just give them a weird mystical ability and don't explain it.
Yeah.
I highly recommend run an entire campaign where every monster is just a different kind of dragon. Totally, totally doable. Like you have wormlings, young dragons, adult dragons, and ancient for every freaking color. That's 40 dragons.
Yeah, if you get into the dragonkin and drakes who don't have spellcasting, I think you'll have the variety you need. The only challenge is that everything will be a spellcaster.
Well, a lot of dragons, well, at least in 5e, a lot of dragons don't have any spells. No spells.
Lower level dragons?
Yeah.
Oh, fair enough.
Or it's a thing you have to slap onto them. Hey, you can give dragons spellcasting.
Oh. I guess I've just always taken that option.
Yeah, me too.
Because I'm a monster.
I always did. It was like, I can just pick any 7 spells? Okay. Wish.
Yeah.
Power word kill.
I wish for more spells. Counter spell so they can't counter my counter.
Disintegrate, obviously. Polymorph disintegrate.
Yeah.
I'm a bastard.
So another thing that comes up a lot in fantasy settings is the gunslinger archetype.
Who's mixing genres now, Shane?
Yeah, you know, Warcraft is doing it with the dwarves and their stupid black powder rifles. I think we can summarize that one as just use crossbows, right? I mean,
yeah.
Like, who cares if it actually takes, you know, 25 seconds to reload a black powder rifle? Like, no one cares. Move on.
Yeah, it's boring. Or, you know, make them single shot, whatever, then drop them. Well, I draw another one.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have time to expound upon that further, and we don't have time because we're running out of time in this episode.
Yep.
So a couple of caveats before we wrap up. Just keep in mind, mechanics that are balanced by in-game flavor tend to be bad design. So this is when the social impact or implications of using a power are supposed to be what restrict you from doing it. So Psykers in 40K or Defilers in Dark Sun, the thing where the social cost of doing something is really the only reason that would prevent you from doing it.
Right. So if you totally reflavored like the warp and Psykers and they don't draw the power from the warp and there's no chance of them summoning a demon, well, now they're just really powerful all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And also look out for people who hate reflavoring. What I tend to do if I am reflavoring something pretty drastically in a game is like I don't tell the other players at the table. And that helps them maintain verisimilitude. And mechanically, it's exactly the same for them.
Yeah, I identify with players who don't trust other players reflavoring. you got to grin and bear it with the GM because it doesn't matter when the GM does it.
Yes, that's the second point. Like, if you're a player doing it, tell the GM.
Oh, definitely.
At the very least.
Oh, yeah.
If they hate reflavoring, tell them to contact us.
Yeah, we'll help you.
Yeah.
All right, do you hear that, Ishan?
That's the sound of me sliding a new clip into my longbow.
All right, well, if you're going to start shooting things, we're going to have to move on to the Character Creation Forge. But before we do that, let's talk about how our listeners can get in contact with us.
We do love hearing from you.
You can tweet at Shane, at Mundangerous, that's M-U-N dangerous.
And you can tweet at Ishan, at Evil Sans Carne, that's Malice minus Meat.
And you can tweet at the show, at TPTcast.
You can also email us if you can fit it into 140 characters at TotalPartyThrill@gmail.com.
And you can find us on the web at www.TotalPartyThrillCast.com.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at TotalPartyThrill.
So this week in the Character Creation Forge, we are building Captain America.
And he goes to hell.
I believe he's the first Avenger.
I think you might be right. Maybe eventually the last?
I am basing that solely on movie titles.
He is the most civil of the warriors.
Okay. So Captain America has a shield, yeah?
Mm-hmm, yep.
And he throws it at things.
Yep.
And then he punches them.
That's also true.
Okay. And then what else?
Sometimes he shoots things and all his stats are 20s.
Okay, cool. So, that's going to be a problem because fighting with the shield, sucks in 5th edition.
Hot garbage, yeah.
And throwing a shield is basically impossible.
Yeah, the best you can get is Eldritch Knight's Weapon Bond, which lets you return a weapon to your hand as a bonus action, which just gives your shield the loading property.
Yeah, I like a loading shield.
Yeah, and that's assuming you can convince your GM that a shield is a weapon.
Right. Improvised weapon, 1d4.
So if you're going to play a primary shield combatant in 5th edition, you are reflavoring.
And what are we reflavoring to make this work?
The build is Battlemaster Fighter 13, Fiendish Warlock 2, Swashbuckler Rogue 5.
Okay, I like what I'm hearing, because you're going deep in fighter, which means he's going to have a lot of ASIs, which means Captain America is going to have all that charisma and that strength and that constitution and that wisdom and that intelligence and that dexterity.
Yeah, hopefully. We can't get all the way, but yeah, strength, charisma, dexterity, these are the things that you're looking for. I mean, probably you should start with at least 13 and everything, just because you're freaking Captain America.
Yeah, you're Captain America.
Yeah. So with Fighter, you got three attacks. You have your Action Surge, because Captain America moves really freaking quickly. And you have those maneuvers, because he's an amazing fighter.
Okay, yeah, so that's straightforward. So why do we take Warlock?
Because Captain America has actually been working for Hydra. So, for the devil.
Oh.
That's how that works, yeah.
Okay.
No, that's not actually the case, I hope. We actually want the Eldritch Blast cantrip.
Okay.
Because it deals force damage and the number of attacks scale. So eventually you're going to have four attacks with it. And it's ranged and it's based on charisma. I don't know if you're following me yet.
Oh, I'm following.
Yeah?
That Eldritch Blast. That's a shield.
There you go, my friend. You throw your shield. Great. It does 1d10 force damage.
And then comes back to you.
At level 5...
You throw your shield, you hit one enemy, it comes back to you, you throw it again. Or you throw it at one enemy, it bounces off him, hits another enemy, and then it comes back.
There you go. And at level 17, you're hitting four people.
Right.
Because you're that good. Because you're Captain America.
And you got Invocation, so you're going to take Agonizing Blast to add some extra damage to those attacks, and Repelling Blast to knock them backwards.
That's right.
Because you're nothing if not a pinball machine.
Stuck in an elevator with four bad guys?
Right.
Hit them all with your shield and throw them against the wall. You also regain a bit of vigor when you're winning a battle. And you have Burning Hands and Command, which are easily reflavored as a flamethrower, and of course Captain America telling someone to do something and they do it.
Makes sense.
You could also, if you really want, you could be a Fey Lock.
Nah, that's lame.
Fey Presence is cool.
Okay, fine.
Fairy Fire and Sleep are a little tougher to deal with, but I guess he could have some Batman gadgets, whatever. Tony Stark gadgets, there you go.
Yeah, he borrowed some from Stark Enterprises. So then we've got Rogue. And obviously, you're looking for expertise because he's Captain America.
Mm-hmm. You also get Cunning Action, which means you can run as fast as a car, like he does in the freaking movie.
Yeah.
I would say we could just reflavor a Tabaxi, so he really could run that fast, but I think that's more Black Panther.
Yeah, that's probably right.
Yeah. And then at level 5, you get Uncanny Dodge, which makes Captain America super tanky. Also, if you're having the damage you're taking for something...
Hiding behind that shield.
Absolutely.
And then you're taking Swashbuckler so you can hit your sneak attack damage onto solo targets, which you will, of course, reflavor whatever weapon you're using in your other hand as your fist.
Right. Or...
just hitting it with the shield.
Or Bucky Barnes. My fist is Bucky Barnes.
All right. If you want to support the show, the easiest way to do that is to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. And if you're willing to help us out, we'll read your 5-star review on the air.
You can also find us on Stitcher. It's like a Pandora for podcasts. If you like or favorite us there, the algorithm will help other people find us.
So what do we have planned for next week's episode?
We are talking about the Star Wars campaign setting. Because no one knows about it.
I can't wait to learn. You know what? I'm just going to read a bunch of Star Wars fiction in the next week to prepare for this.
You also did this last week, too.
What?
Read Star Wars fiction.
Actually, I've moved back to 40K.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're like, Thrawn is ridiculous.
Yeah. Thrawn is garbage, man. Wait for next week. You can hear my treatise on Thrawn.
Look, you may think you already know this stuff, but it's different when you're playing a game in it, is all I'm going to say.
All right. And what are we building in the Character Creation Forge?
We're building that galaxy-renowned Star Wars character, George Washington.
Okay.
You'll see.
Okay. That's it for episode 86 of Total Party Thrill. I hope we've lived up to our name, but either way, I'm Shane.
And I'm Ishan. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, so my story on Guy Fieri's American Bar and Grill. Or whatever the hell it's called. It is the worst reviewed restaurant the New York Times has ever done. They eviscerated
yeah.
it. It's like a Times Square, right? It's a tourist trap. So naturally that review comes out and we had to go because it was like a work dinner, right? So like we go in there and surprise, wasn't hard to get a table. So like we sit down and then like we're like talking to the waiter and we're like, so that review, huh? And he's like, yeah, that was rough. That guy did not like it, but I think we've hammered out the issues in the kitchen. So I think we're good. And so we're like, okay, so like, what do you recommend here? And, I don't know. There were some fries, right? And, the story behind it was like, this is how Guy Fieri used to make his fries when he was in high school. I'm like, all right, great.
So appetizing.
So I'm now trusting the palate of a freaking 16-year-old. Lovely. It's like his, I don't know what, I can't even imagine what was on these things. So anyway, so
mayonnaise,
he's like,
and Old Bay.
Yeah, it's called donkey sauce. So the waiter's like, so just a warning, the fries actually come out a little bit cold, but that's how they're intended. But like, not everybody's ready for that. And I'm like, okay, dude, whatever. Like, this is the way they're supposed to be, right. So fine.
I'm literally here for the story. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. So they come out. They are cold. They are disgusting. And we don't eat more than like one bite. And I'm just sitting there and I'm like, these things cost like $14. Like, I don't care if that's how you made them in high school. Make them good now. Also, the burger was like really dry. But it was just like,
the burger was dry.
It's the worst restaurant in the world. And we went back twice.
Yeah, really getting your money's worth out of that monkey paw, huh?
You know, it's when it's client money, it's like, it's everybody's money. Never have I not expensed a meal at Guy Fieri's American Kitchen.
When I'm eating on company money, I always usually end up going to like, yeah, oh, you're right. It's someplace awful. Almost always someplace awful.
Yeah, you got to go someplace speculative at least, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. But anyway, so it earned every single star it lost. And cut.